Hello, fellow travelers, and welcome to the Traverse the Stars podcast. Today's special guest is Francois Chow. You know him as Walter in The Tick and The Shredder in the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, The Secret of the Ooze. Now come join me as we go traversing the stars.
Hello, Mr. Chow. Thank you so much for coming to the Traversing the Stars podcast.
Oh, thanks, Jeff. Thanks for having me.
It's totally my pleasure. You were in some very important shows for me growing up, including Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, which we'll hit in just a moment.
Alrighty.
So I always like to start with a question of inspiration. So what inspired you to become an actor, and who were your earliest influences?
Okay, inspired me. I don't know if it inspired me. I was, I think maybe sophomore, junior year in high school, I started doing plays in school, just to do, for something to do. And I found that, wow, this is kind of fun. This is, this is something I'd like to do. And of course, I kept doing it. And I was a straight A student up until then. And I mean, I was getting, letters of invitations from all these Ivy League schools to, apply to for college and stuff. And then I started doing plays. And by senior year, those letters didn't come anymore. I thought, oh, okay, I guess maybe this is a sign. There was something lucky that I discovered I like to do. And then, for me to be able to do it now is amazing. Yeah.
So what was it about performing in plays that captured your imagination?
I don't know. It was fun, but it felt, it was something that, I don't want to say comfortable, but it was almost like, hey, this is something that I'm, this is kind of an ease to it that I found. Mm. I didn't have stage fright. I didn't worry about standing in front of a bunch of people I think from an early age, I loved movies and TV. So I've probably watched more TV and movies than a whole lot of people put together. But that's the kind of world you get lost in. And I found it very, it was very pleasing to be able to, to say, quote, act and to play different parts and to do something. And I thought, oh, I kind of like this. This is pretty, I don't know how, I was probably terrible, but I thought, no, this feels good.
can you remember some of the plays you were in and some of the roles you had?
Well, let's see. It's it's funny. Even before high school, when we would do it in grade school, elementary school, when we do the Christmas play and stuff, I was always one of the wise men.
Oh, wow.
I wonder why.
It's a sign of your great intelligence, I'm sure.
Yeah, right. But no, I did, of course, in high school, we do all these the sort of musicals that, these old musicals. I think we did one called Carnival. I was aroused about. I didn't even know what that was at the time, but, hey. what else did we do? Jesus is like, you can't take it with you. I was the Russian guy, the friend of the family, I guess. But a bunch of other stuff. And I did the Godspell. I was John the Baptist. That was kind of fun. But yeah, that kind of stuff was like, oh, it's not just the doing the show itself. It's the camaraderie, the whole, it's like, the theater family that you get. I mean, I truly was a theater geek in high school. It was like, oh, this is where I belong. I wasn't a jock, and I wasn't, a smart in terms of academics, but I thought, hey, this is it. This is good. These people are like me.
Well, you've had a very impressive movie and television career. Have you considered going back to theater, or have you gone back to theater since you've become a TV movie star?
I love theater, but to be honest, let's see, I'm trying to remember the last theater production I did here in Los Angeles was maybe, 12 years ago. And not because, the opportunity hasn't arisen, but, it's, you know, timing. As you get older, you have other obligations, family, stuff like that. When I was younger and single, man, I was, you know, I lived here and I would go off and do regional theater, 2-3 times a year, you know, go off to do a play somewhere for 2 months and then come back and stuff like that. But, that's just, it's not feasible now. And, and also, to be completely honest, at my age now, I've gotten really lazy. it's like, oh, theater, huh? Oh, play. Okay, let me see. Wait a minute. That means there's rehearsal like all day long. And then once the play opens, it's like 8 shows a week. And then this and that. And it's like, oh, man, I don't know. Maybe I'll just stick to stick to TV and film right now.
I think the word you're looking for is comfortable.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I mean, unless an incredible part comes up, you know, something that you would never get a chance to do again, I would say, yeah, sure, of course. And I try to figure out how to do it. But it's not, I mean, to be honest, it's not my first, first choice, unless I was independently wealthy or I won the lottery or, you know, something that I wouldn't have to worry about, life.
Well, I actually did some research on you, as I do always with my guests, and I was amazed at how many places you live. You live in Cambodia, Saigon, France, before you moved to the United States.
Right.
These are, you know, very diverse places. How had living in all these different locations, how did that form you into the person you are now?
I think it really is a big influence. I mean, I say I was born in Cambodia, and we moved to Saigon when I was, it must be like 5 years old, maybe. And then my mother and I left Saigon. On the way to the States, I lived in France with a foster family for that must be like a year and a half. While my mother went ahead, came here and, you know, set up life for us. Then I came here, and then, even here, we lived in Washington, D.C. And we lived in Delaware and then Washington, D.C. And then for like 2 years, we moved and we lived in Africa.
Oh, wow.
Republic of the Congo.
Holy crap. I didn't know that at all.
Yeah. I was there for a couple of years. My stepfather had a job that took him there. So, it was wild. It was like, I went to the American school there and a whole bunch of Americans living there, like a lot of families I worked for, like Pan Am then and stuff like that. So then I moved back to the States, mostly on the East Coast, Maryland, Washington, D.C. again. And then finally, after school, I moved to L.A. L.A. is the place I've been the longest, I would say. I mean, I've been here almost 40 years. So, yeah.
Oh, wow. So, yeah. So what does that mean to you, having so many different experiences in so many different places? There's something that you learned specifically about maybe people in general, different cultures that you've been able to utilize in your own life?
I think it gave me a more, I don't know, this sounds kind of pretentious, but a more maybe continental outlook on life that I wouldn't have had if I had, say, been born in the States here and all just lived here all my life and not traveled. Being in different countries and different environments really, you know, it just gives you a different outlook on things. I don't know, good or bad, but it's different from just being in one place, I guess. Languages. When I was born in Cambodia, my first language is French. I spoke French and Vietnamese. I left Vietnam, and on the way over here, like I said, I lived in France for a while, spoke nothing but French, and at a young age, forgot all my Vietnamese. I mean, to this day, I'm like, oh my God, I wish I retained it. I came here, I had to learn English, and you know, to this day, French is still, I'm still pretty good at, but I can, when I hear people speak Vietnamese, I know they're speaking Vietnamese. I just don't understand what they're saying anymore. I know what language that is.
So having to learn English at a later point and knowing France and at least at some point knowing Vietnamese, does that give you a better understanding of the language itself? You've had to learn it, multiple languages and different kinds of, I'm sure the grammar and all that is all different places. Does that also allow you to become a better maybe reader and or analyzer of words?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, of course, when you're young, you know, that age, it's the language is easier to pick up. You're like a sponge. You just absorb everything. I think it took me maybe, maybe 8 months or something, maybe a little more to learn English. Because, of course, I learned a lot of it watching TV, watching like the old Star Trek and all those shows from the 60s and 70s. You know, I was like, oh my God, I'm in heaven. If I could just sit here all day long watching TV, it would be great. But, you know, I guess, I mean, I don't know about anybody else, but picking up, like I took Spanish in high school, and that was pretty easy to pick up because I guess maybe it's similar to the French and so forth, and other languages. Asian languages a lot harder. My wife is Japanese American, and she speaks Japanese fluently, so that's a little easier for me to pick up if I have to do it right. But other languages, Chinese, Mandarin, man, that's just totally foreign to me. I was in China a few years, 10 years ago, shooting a movie, and I had never felt so out of place. It really, it was amazing. I thought, oh, look, hey, I'm in an Asian country. I should fit right in. Boy, it was the language is so hard, and everything was just felt like, oh my God. I'm too American now. It was like I come back and I'm going, oh man, I gotta learn Mandarin. Of course I didn't. But
yeah,
yeah.
That's pretty funny. Was that for that was for a movie you were in when you were in China for a while?
We shot a we did a movie called 21 and Over, right? That was 2011, I think. Anyway, there was some Chinese money in it. So I guess there was some investment from China. So because of that, we had to go and shoot some stuff over there, some extra stuff for the Chinese market, I guess, or, you know. That was the stipulation. So a bunch of us went over and shot a couple of scenes. We were not in Beijing. We were in a little, they said, oh, you're going to be in this, this little town. It's about 2.5 hour ride out of Beijing, airplane ride out of Beijing. This little town, I can't remember the name exactly, but we get there and it's like, you know, this little town is like a big city. Right. It was like, wow, this is a little town. This is weird. So we shot there for a while and then stayed in Beijing for a while and then came back. Yeah. It was a fun experience. One of the perks of being an actor is you get to travel to places you probably normally would you know, never think of going to.
I would definitely envy that life. I've only traveled out of the country twice. I always want to do it way more times. I've been to Canada, which is, I guess, it counts to me, the ones like the first state, but it counts. It's another country.
And, hey, yeah.
I spent some time in Costa Rica for a little while. But oh, cool. I always wanted to travel further, so I envy what you've accomplished. So that's so cool.
it is. It's, you know, I think I've for acting, I think I've gone to, I went to Australia, Sri Lanka, Thailand, I think, a bunch of places, London. It's great. It's just, it's good to be traveling on somebody else's dime.
So when you're choosing your next role, you're like, what country have not been to yet? I want to go.
Yeah, exactly. 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 I was just saying to somebody the other day, I was reading a book by Michael Caine, I think. He's an autobiography or something. And his stories about his acting career. And he said, later on in life, he said one of the first things he checks when they offer him something is, where is the location? Where do I get to go? If it's a good place, then usually he'll sign up for it. If it's not, then he just thinks about it twice.
Well, you were in Lost, so that means you filmed in Hawaii then for a while too, I imagine.
Oh yeah. Yeah,
that must have been a very strenuous shoot in Hawaii for a while.
Hey, someone's got to do it, right?
Right.
Miss those trips. Yeah, I mean, if you're going to go on location, Hawaii is a pretty good, pretty good place to go.
Indeed. Well, where I know you best is from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, Secret of the Ooze, mm-hmm. where you played right. Shredder, which is obviously, for anyone who grew up in my generation, is one of the biggest villains there ever was, Shredder.
Yeah.
I mean, like I said, if you grew up in the 90s, Shredder was like one of the big bad. I mean, if there's the Joker, there's like Lex Luthor, right. Shredder. You're all in the same boat.
Right.
So how did you get involved with Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2? And did you know anything about the property? Because it had already had that first movie prior to getting the role.
Yeah. No, I had read the comics even before the first movie.
Oh, wow.
I used to be a big comics guy. I would just go to the store every week and stock up and, but yeah, I had read the comics, and then I saw the first movie, which I thought was really great. Going into it, you go, how are they going to do this, right? But then with the guys in the suits and all that stuff, was like, oh wow, it's for 1980 late 80s, it was like, wow, this is pretty good. This is pretty cool.
Jim Henson.
Yeah. I didn't know anything about it, but then I got a call from my agent saying, hey, I have this audition for you. It's for this Ninja Turtles movie or something. And I said, oh, okay. And it was for the Shredder. And I thought, oh, I wonder what happened. Because the Jimmy Saito, who played the Shredder in the first movie, I know him way back from doing stuff with him here in LA. And I auditioned. Lucky for me, I got the part. And, off to Wilmington, North Carolina, I went. And it was at that point in my life, in my career, it was like, oh my God, I got a job. It didn't matter what it was, right? It's like, oh, this is great. I'm off for like 5 weeks doing this, something that, I want to do. And I've been doing a bunch of these Comic Cons and stuff, and it's just amazes me how it has endured, how this is the Ninja Turtles stuff is, and basically because of guys like you who come up to me and say, oh my God, you were the nightmare of my childhood. You scared me. Oh, you were so great. I love the Shredder. It's like, oh, okay.
Well, I mean, what does that mean to you that you still, all these years later, the character just endures with the generation? I mean, people of my generation, we still look to, like I said, the Teen Mutant Ninja Turtles. And I must admit, at 42 years old, I still watch the damn movies regular. I'm still a big fan. How does that make you feel about what you did to know that audiences still hold on to it this many decades later? Because it's been almost 30 years.
Yeah. So a little more than, I think,
31.
Yeah, 31 years is the anniversary. It's very humbling to be, to go, oh my God, I'm lucky enough to be a part of something like this. You just go, wow, it's amazing. You really can't describe, but people come up to you and say, hey, I, you know, you, that character was amazing to me and stayed with me and stuff like that. And of course, you don't think of anything like that when you're doing it, right? You just, you know, you try to do the best you can, and whatever comes out is that's it. But yeah, it's like I say, humbling. It's you know, and you feel very lucky to have that in your belt. Yeah.
Mm. Now, when you're doing the convention scene, do you find that most of the people in line are the older folks like me, or do you think that, or is it a lot of like the new kids, new generations, are now turning to the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle movies?
It's both. It's guys around your age coming up and saying, "Hey, you know, you were my favorite when I was a kid," and at the same time, they're bringing their children with them. And telling me, yo, now, see, I just introduced them to Ninja Turtles and they love it, kind of thing, right? So, you know, the next generation is being introduced to it. And it's like they're passing on their passion for it to their kids. It's really great. So it's a lot of both, mostly a little bit older people. Who are in line for the Ninja Turtle stuff, for the Shredder stuff.
Now I believe you said you do have a family now. I assume that you have kids. Have they seen the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle movie that you're in?
Yeah, my daughter is like 16 and a half now. Yeah, she's seen the movies. She's like, yeah, it's okay.
It's pretty- It's like, whatever, Dad.
Yeah. She's waiting for me to get some, to be something. To get into the Marvel universe. I
think. Oh yes,
she's a Marvel nut, so she she loves everything. So she's going, you know, hey, you know, next time you see this person, if you see this person, you know, let me know. Anything.
Well, if anyone's from Marvel watching this show, get Mr. Chow into a movie right now.
Yeah,
it must happen. So when you played Shredder, like you said, it was in the second one. The first one was played time Shredder was performed. It was James Saito. You said
is that Saito.
Saito. Saito. Saito, yeah. Performed it. So when you're playing Shredder, did you look toward Saito's performance, or did you try to make it more of your own? How did that performance come about?
It was not the. I didn't really try to make it the same as James. I mean, the character itself is not, you know, you can't really deviate too far from what he has to be. So, and the way they did it, so, you know, because if you remember in the first movie, Shredder gets pushed into that garbage pile and we figure he's had it.
Yeah.
So they respect him in the second movie, and my hand pops out of the big garbage pile and I climb out of it and I'm a little more scarred and all that stuff. And, but basically, I depend a lot on, I want to say, imagination, so that it's not really, I don't know what I kind of research I could have done for the Shredder. I couldn't go out. I didn't want to go out and recruit a bunch of guys to be to be my henchmen and stuff like that. So, you know, it's imagination. It helped a lot that I was big into comics. I read a lot of comics, and I knew what the frame of mind was kind of for that kind of stuff.
I think we all do need henchmen. You know, a group of people who are like, "Hey, go out and do that for me."
Yeah,
go to the exactly. grocery store for me, henchmen.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, when most people play, most people talk about villains, they always say that in the villain's mind, you know, he's the hero, you know, of his own sort, stuff like that.
Yeah.
With Shredder, is he, do you approach it the same way, or is Shredder pretty much just bad?
As you know, I've played a lot of villains so far, and never have I ever thought of myself as the bad guy or the villain. I don't think any villain thinks of himself as you know, the bad guy. I don't know if they think of themselves as the hero, but it's just like, oh, I need to accomplish something, and this is how I'm going to do it, and you know, I'll do whatever it takes, I guess. That's the kind of thinking that is good. obviously will make you a villain if you're going to be doing bad stuff.
Yeah.
So, I never thought the Shredder was the, you know, the movie is now called Shredder. But I never thought I was the guy. Oh, I'm the bad guy. I have to act mean, evil, and stuff like that. No, you just you do what you do. You have to do to get those turtles. I got to do what I have to do.
How fun is it to do the villain dialogue? Because Shredder has so much good villain dialogue, and that must have been really a treat to play.
it was fun, and then of course a lot of fans will come up, and they all have their own favorite quotes or whatever that they would love to have me sign on the picture and stuff. And there's a bunch of them that they're babies or stuff like that.
Is that the one that the most popular is the their babies line from, or is there another one that
that's pretty high up there, I would say. They're babies. What else was that? Oh, there is only one thing next: revenge. That might be a close second.
Yeah. When you're playing Shredder, obviously you're getting into character, you're gonna be like all angry and kind of serious. You're playing against these guys in latex. Does that make it harder to stay like in like serious character? Because they're funny and they're Teenage Mutant Turtles. They're kind of funny and goofy characters. Is it harder to stay in character and serious during those scenes?
I have to think back, because like you say, it's been 31 years, and I don't remember having that hard a time. Maybe that's one of the reasons why I'm always cast as the bad guy. I think I must be doing something. I must be pretty good at it, because I never thought about the. It was fun, but when you look back on stuff, it is kind of, I look back on it now and go, wow, those guys in the suits, at that time, I just kind of, a lot of times I felt sorry for them because it was so hard to work in those suits and things. They did a great job. It was better them than me in those suits.
Well, I mean, you didn't have it that easy either. I mean, Shredder has some heavy gear that you're wearing as Shredder. I mean, the helmet alone seems like that was pretty heavy.
Yeah, for some reason, the helmet was the only thing that was real. I mean, it was a metal helmet that they for the Secret of Use. I don't know what Jimmy wore in the first one, but the rest of the costume for me was just regular sort of cosplay. Not even up to par to cosplay people what they do today. But the helmet was heavy, and then. They in the second one they introduced this big cape on him, right?
Yeah,
I don't know why that was there either, but that took a little while to get used to walking around, moving around with that big heavy thing hanging on you and making it look kind of like you knew what you were doing. So that took a little practice.
So, if memory serves, in that movie, you have the helmet on throughout the entire movie, let you take it off. Right. How does having that helmet on at the whole time affect how you perform the character? Because I mean, once again, you lose facial features mostly, I assume. During it.
I mean, you got the helmet and you have the mask, so basically all you see are my eyes. One of the reasons I think they kind of changed things for the second movie was the understanding was that the first movie. Some people felt it was a little too dark or violent for little kids. So the second movie basically is it's like a Nickelodeon kind of thing, right? It's very campy and fun and stuff like that. And Shredder doesn't really do any fighting. He just sort of orders his guys. He's kind of standing there going, hey, Toka, Raza, go get them kind of thing. So basically I didn't have to move too much. And a lot of it was just the shots were more close up, of my face as opposed to me having to move around and stuff. So it wasn't too bad. It was just, I guess, it's what amazes me though was that basically, like I said, you saw it with my eyes, but I remember after I did that, and I was shooting something else like a year later, and I was on set, and this little boy came up and said, brought this little girl with him, came up, and they were like, "Oh, it's him. Hey, how are you?" He goes, "No." And he goes, yes, it's the Shredder. And I was like, holy cow, how do you guys know it was me? No, we recognize you. So I guess it's for little kids, it's, you know, it's kind of burned into your memory of what the character looks like.
Oh, 100%. I mean, I had a Secret of the Ooze book. I think it was like the movie book that they have of it. It had like the photos inside and all that. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, like I said, it really did stick with my generation. It was one of those seminal movies.
Yeah.
So, but when you're playing the Shredder, how badly did you want to jump in and do some fight scenes? Like, would you ever be like, "Hey, can I jump in and do some, you know, kick someone's ass?"
Yeah. No, I would have loved to. To have done something. I've been training in martial arts most of my life. Like I started when I was, I think, 12 years old, and I teach class a couple of nights a week here in LA. So, that would have been a lot of fun to do. You know, the reality of the business is that, you know, they don't let you do too much of that stuff because they don't want you to get hurt. They always have a stunt guy, you know. Unless it's really, you know, I always it's one of my sort of pet peeves when I watch these action movies and I see the actor and then all, and it switches to you know, the stunt person doing the stuff, and then it switches back, and I go, wait a minute. I know that's not him, come on, try to get it like something, right? But yeah, no, I wish I opportunity to do, because that stuff is fun to do. I mean, you know, the few chances I've gotten to do it, it was like, oh man, this is great.
Well, it kind of reminds me of The Tick when you played Walter. There's a fight scene in The Tick with the character of Walter, but he has the bag over his head. And is that you or is that the sun person?
Okay, here's the scoop behind the story. That was the stunt person. I go there and they had all the, you know, the stunt team had already planned it all out. And obviously they keep the bag on because it's not, you know, it's a stunt guy.
Right.
And I'm thinking, well, geez, logically, if I like knock down the first two guys, right, I would just take the bag off so I could see what I was doing.
Right.
Kick ass all the rest of the guys and then put the bag back on at the last second when, you know, so that Arthur doesn't know it's me, kind of thing. So we go there today. I see they show me the stunt, and I go, "Hey, that's pretty good. I could probably do that." And they were like, "You know, if you rehearse with us, we feel better about it." And it was back and forth, and I said, "Okay, well, why don't you start the fight, and we'll cut, and then we'll, you know, the Kage, the stunt guy, will step in and do the rest." And I said, "Okay," but even that was just, you know, it was like, After a few takes, I was like, you know what, you guys do the whole thing. This is stupid. I'm just gonna, you know. But the second season, they realized that I had some martial arts background, so I got to do all the stunts in the second season, which was really a blast.
Yeah, I mean, you got to be Walter is revealed in season two to be a member of Aegis.
Right.
Unfortunately, the series ends on a cliffhanger. If memory serves. Do you know where they're going to take your character if the series has continued?
I think, yeah. I mean, I don't know where they're going to take the character, but I think the character, Walter, was going to be, you know, pretty major, not major, but a good part of the third season. However long it's going to be, because they really set up stuff that, you know, oh, he's not what he seems, and even at the end when he confesses and this and that, he's still not, you know, quite. There's still some secrets there. So yeah, I would have loved to, you know, like for instance, know why he's so obsessed with everybody's feet. And,
yes,
right.
Do people come up to you and repeat that line to you? How's your feet? Or they tell you how their feet are when they come past?
They there's a couple of people have come up to me and said, you and say, hey, how are your feet? I'm like, hey, all right. A Tick fan. Yay.
it must be a weird thing to be known for, the feet guy.
Well, you know, I have to tell you that, you know, obviously I've been lucky enough to have been the shredder and then, doing that stuff on Lost and all these other things, but playing Walter in The Tick is my absolute favorite thing I've ever done. You know, I keep telling people, man, I have waited 40 years for Walter to come along, because it's basically me. It's basically, you know, Walter, I'm sort of this kind of goofy, geeky, you know, kind of boring guy who's just like loves superhero stuff.
Yeah. So do you prefer comedy more than being the heavy?
Not necessarily. I mean, it's you know, it's but you know, I don't get cast in comedies too often. I don't know why. but yeah, it's the same stuff. And you don't think of it as, oh, now I have to be funny. It's just, oh, this is, you know, you have to just do whatever the character is doing and kind of pretty much commit to it. And you know, that's how it works. So, yeah. No, I have no preference.
Because Walter was a fun character. I mean, he's such a good guy. Then you find out that he's a like secret agent. And, you know, you did want to find out where did this all started from and why.
Yeah.
You know, was it an accident that he becomes the stepfather of Arthur? Or did it just kind of, you know, happen and just sort of happens to be his connection?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. No, he, I mean, he does explain, I mean, when he sort of reveals himself, he does sort of explain why, what happened. You know, he was put in charge of watching over Arthur's family. And then when Arthur's father was killed, he just fell in love with the mom and kind of, you know, went on from there. So, yeah, no, it was just, I wish we had at least a third season to go into more of what was, you know, what was going on.
I mean, I would hope so. I mean, with so much streaming going on and there's so much revisiting of old shows.
Yeah.
It's only been off the air for, what, a couple of years now?
Yeah, I think like three, four years maybe?
Yeah.
Yeah.
This time for him to bring it back. I mean, Amazon Prime is listening. Bring back The Tick for another couple of seasons. We need more Walter.
Yeah, I think it's a lot of, you know, you never know what goes behind the decisions to cancel the show or to keep it going or whatever. So I think for, in terms of The Tick, maybe a little more politics went into why, you know, producers left, new producers come in. It's not their baby. They're, you know, it's who knows.
So what are you working on next or now?
I've been doing usually I do a bunch of guest stars on some episodic TV shows. I did a Good Doctor last year, and before that I did a Chicago. There's a spate of Good Doctor, Chicago Med. And I've been playing a lot of people's fathers. I keep telling you know, the young Asian American actors that I meet that I said, hey, you know, keep an eye on me because sooner or later I'm going to be playing your dad. And sure enough, I'm like a lot of that. But I've been doing that, and I had that PS4 game, Ghost of Tsushima, turned out to be a big, huge game. I think, and then I did another video game. It's a huge business now. All the mocap stuff, and I mean, you need actors basically. It's like filming a movie. I'm shooting something now in Vancouver, and I'm not sure I'm supposed to be able to tell anyone yet, so I better not.
but it's
a fun project.
When you're ready to talk about it, you gotta come back, okay?
Sure. Yeah, yeah. Of course.
That'd be absolutely fantastic.
Yeah. No, it's almost, I would say, in the same vein as Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Okay.
In terms of its fan base.
Oh, okay. That's a hell of a tease you have right there.
Yeah, there you go.
All right, now we're going to hear it every single movie. I hear we'll be like, is that the one? Is that the one?
it's going to be, what is it on? Jeez, Netflix. It's a series.
Okay.
It's going to be on Netflix.
Do we kind of know when it may premiere?
I have no idea. We are going to finish shooting in probably around June. So, you know, depending on how much, maybe how fast they want to get on there. But usually it's about maybe at least, you know, 6 months after that or something like that.
Well, you're going to come on. You're going to talk about it, I hope, when it's time.
You got, definitely. I think you'll be, you know, you'll be pleasantly surprised as to what it is.
Oh, man. Now, I got to run through all like the updating of all the movies coming out. I'll be like, could it be this one? It could be this one.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, do you play a good guy or a bad guy in it?
I guess you could say that he's a bad guy.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Very cool. Is this without giving anything away, is this a special effect heavy movie?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yes. It uses the technology for filming these days is mind blowing. It really, you know, it's like, ooh, man. You know, before you would, you know, when we're doing Lost and stuff like that, and they use green screen to, because we're in Hawaii, it's, you know, they have a scene set in somewhere, they, you know, it's like, oh, we can't. But the use of green screen is really good, and you could, you know, the technology they have now blows that away, just like, whoa. It's amazing.
Well, Mr. Chad, look forward to seeing this movie or hearing more about it, and I want to thank you so much for coming to the show.
Oh, you're very welcome. Definitely, you know, have me back when this show opens, and we'll talk about it.
Yeah. Well, like I said, you have my email. If you, because I, like I said, I also won't know which movie I'm looking for. Yeah. If you know it's out, it's completed, and you would, and talk about release, please reach out to me, and I will definitely set up an interview. You are awesome.
Of course. Thank you, John. Nice talking to you.